one of my favorite movies, my mom, she went like, one of my favorite movies is Smile. It's a horror film. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen it, no, Jessica.
I never
you gotta
seen
watch it.
It.
You gotta
Smile?
Watch it. Smile. So mm-hmm. it's kind of like when the people are walking around like this, and it's like very eerie. Now, here's why I like it, is the premise of the film is people who are dying by suicide, right? So how it is, and it's two, Smile 1 and Smile 2. I watched this from a psychoanalytical lens when I first watched it, because I'm like, you know, I don't like horror. But God told me to watch it. And so I watched it with one of my colleagues. She's a therapist, too. So we was like on the phone watching it. And I'm typing a message as I'm watching it. I said, oh, man, I got to teach this one day. So how the story goes is like, if you saw somebody take their lives in a movie, mm-hmm. After a while, you begin psychosis. And little by little, you change. And whatever your trauma is, it begins to metastasize. Mm-hmm. And eventually, you take your life. And so whoever sees you, they're the next person to take their life. Now, only one person out of the film who it bypassed and they were able to beat it. Most of the people don't. And the smile part comes in because the spirit overtakes you to where you go through these different phases. And within like 8 to 14 days, you take your life. And whoever sees you is the next person. And so when they finally find out this pattern, they go to a guy who's in prison, and they're like, yo, this girl, she knows that it's a matter of time before, you know, and she was just like, how do you beat it? And he's trying to tell them only one person has beat it was him, because he's in prison now, but he's in isolation. So he's almost in like solitary confinement. So he's not around people to even in engage. This is the part that really got me. He said, it is fueled by trauma and it needs a host. Mm. When you start having sex with people, it's not just having sex, it's trauma coming Absolutely. Together. And it needs a host to survive. That's why I tell pastors, and when I'm going to churches, mental health ain't just mental, man, that thing is spiritual. Mm-hmm. Because there are some people that have disorders that they don't just need a therapist, baby, they need deliverance. Mm-hmm. Because that thing is rooted in the very fabric. It is congenital, meaning that that is something that was there since birth, that was passed down from dad,
generation,
grandma, generation. And ain't nothing more powerful than a generational curse going from generation to generation, because each generation, it gets stronger and stronger and stronger.
Yep.
And it becomes harder and harder to break off.
Yep.
And when I began to look at that movie, I said, this is it.
Yeah.
The trauma needs a host.
Yeah.
That's why if you don't heal, mm-hmm. whatever you don't transcend, you're going to transmit it. Mm-hmm. And that's the issue that we have in the sort of microcosmic of what we're seeing today. Trauma.
What about the people that don't think they have trauma? Because I feel like the main thing is so many people are in denial of the trauma that they do have, to where they can't even begin the healing process because they don't even believe they've normalized their trauma so much that is normal to them, opposed to actual, this yeah. is not normal behavior.
Yeah. Well, those people, because a lot of times what's happening, Jessica, people have turned off their part of their brain. Like, I'm on tour with David and Tamela Mann and their love and relationship tour. And I was telling this story years ago, working with a couple. And then this was actually a case vignette that we had in my master's program as well. Lady was married, and one night her and her husbands are having sex. And she like freaked out on him, spazzed out on him, right? And he was just like, what the hell? Like, she was like beating him, get off of me. Like, stop this, stop it. And so he was just like, yo, like, what was going on? At 7 years old, she had been molested. Mm. And what she did was, you can turn your brain off from an experience and it won't come back until years later. And so in the moment that her husband was on her, the brain shifted back to what happened at 7. But in the present, the husband didn't know that she had been molested. You know what I mean? And so I think what a lot of people do for survival is I turn it off as if it didn't happen and I live in denial, but that does not negate the reality of my current behavior and functioning. And that's what happened. And that's why people don't know that they need healing. And as I say, there's people who go to therapy and people who don't know that they need to be going. It's just the two types of people. So
what are ways in which somebody, like right now, if somebody's listening to this interview, ways in which they could come into awareness, like patterns that they may have or ways in which they operate where they should question themselves, like, yo, could he be talking about me?
So the first step to awareness is identifying the deficits. What area are you deficient in? And that's not a question that you get to answer on your own. It's a question that you have to answer in order to identify what needs to be restored, what needs to be fixed, what needs to be replaced, where the reordering, because sometimes it's just you need to reorder or reorganize. That's the word I'm looking for. How do you reorganize? And it's going to require honesty. Most of the time when I'm sitting with people in therapy, it's the honesty part. It's like, man, I don't want to admit that this is me. Your admittance is not that you are incapable. Your admittance is that you are acknowledging that something has to or needs to change. And when you can be honest with yourself, you now create a pathway for freedom, healing, liberation, restoration to take place, because even scripture says,
this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, on Hardly Initiated, we talk a lot about leveling up financially, mentally, and spiritually, but there is a reality that we have to face. Financial stress can affect us way more than we realize. It's not just about what's in your bank account. It's about the toll that money worries can take on your mental health and your relationship. In fact, at the start of 2026, roughly 88% of Americans reported feeling some form of financial stress. It brings on anxiety, it disrupts your sleep, and for many couples, it's one of the leading sources of conflict. I've realized that struggling with money or feeling overwhelmed by it doesn't mean that you failed. Sometimes it's about the beliefs we grew up with or just trying to figure it all out on our own. It's something important to remember that therapy isn't for financial advice. It's for managing stress, shame, or anxiety that comes with those financial hurdles. It helps you unpack your relationship with money and build healthier coping strategies so you don't feel alone in the process. What I appreciate about BetterHelp is that they make the process of finding support simple. They have over 30,000 therapists who are fully licensed in the United States and follow a strict code of conduct. When you sign up, you'll fill out a short questionnaire, and their therapist match commitment means that they do the work to find the right fit for your specific needs and goals. They've served over 6 million people globally, and if you ever feel like your match isn't quite right, you could switch to a different therapist at any time. When life feels overwhelming, therapy can help. Sign up now and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/heartlyinitiated. That's betterhelp.com/heartlyinitiated.
Knowing the truth shall what?
Set you free.
Once you begin to acknowledge the truth, immediately there's a door open for freedom, for you to be set free. Because most of us are bound to the lies. Oh, I'm good. I don't need no help. My mama, like, you know, that was them, but I'm good. And the reality of it is that you're not. And the one thing about trauma and the one thing about not being whole, relationship will always expose it.
Relationships will always expose it.
It will always expose it. You know, and that's what I would say. The first step, I try not to be too overly sort of providing such a lot of clinical jargon, but it's just being honest, sitting down, and sometimes you got to write it down. You know, like, I remember in therapy, and the first thing I started to write down was just like, man, I didn't hate my dad, but I had to write down that I was angry and mad at him. And then the next part of that was, what did that anger cause me to believe about myself? And I felt my dad divorcing my mom at the height of, you know, his pastoral career, and then remarrying the usher who sat behind my mom.
Oh.
Who had three kids. So me and my sister, much of our lives was trying to find answers. Like, how do you leave this, go here, and be everything to them, to these kids? And at 31, I had to be honest that, man, this made me mad as hell. And not just be like, oh, I'm good because he's a pastor. Like, no, I'm mad at this nigga. Because I watch you preach Sunday after Sunday, and this is what you did to my mama. Like, that's the type of honesty that you got to have with yourself. Because I didn't want to talk to my dad. And then here's the other part. I go deeper. These kids got the best of him. And we got the worst of him. My father was paralyzed, neck down. My mother prayed him back to wholeness. My father had headaches, migraines. Round the clock, we would be praying for him because he had a blood clot on his brain, so he had a lot of scar tissue that would cause these headaches that would last for weeks and days. And I'm saying to myself, how do you walk away from your little kids laying hands on you? We're praying for you, Daddy. And all of a sudden, you go over here to this family. Like, the amount of honesty that I had to have with myself, because I love, it was almost like I love my dad, but I also despise my father.
Mm. That's compartmentalization.
Exactly. I love you because you gave me life, but as a father, man, I can't stand you. That is what allowed me to truly heal, to not ignore those purest, unfiltered truth. And until you're ready to do that, you're not ready to heal. Because sometimes you got to say, he did touch me. He did molest me. He did abuse me. She did say that. She did do that. And sometimes we as people, even in our pain, we're still trying to protect those who hurt us. And if you want to truly heal, you got to remove that protection. And you have to allow that true vulnerability to happen and to say, no, I ain't holding this no more. And going through that is the most gut-wrenching, disrupted, uncomfortable thing ever. That's why I tell people healing is a dirty business.
Mm.
It's a dirty business. Because, man, you're going to have to touch things that you would rather put gloves on to pick up. Because who wants to say?
You would rather stay in a familial hell than to get to an unfamiliar heaven.
We can stop right there. Y'all give an offering. You would rather live in an unfamiliar and a familiar hell rather than to get to an unfamiliar heaven. That's it. That's it.
It's a wrap.
That's why healing, and for men, you gotta go through that if you're gonna be truly free. Because if not, you will attach yourself to somebody, and this is what we're seeing now.
Come on.
These brothers are not well, and you're not well, and you're causing pain on children, on your spouses, on your partner, and it's unfair.
It's unfair.
For her to be caught, be an innocent bystander in your emotional drive-by shooting. It is unfair. It is inhumane. It is all of the things that I can't even wrap my brain around to say that you don't have the willingness enough to say that, listen, let me identify with my pain and not project it and carry my pain out on my wife and children or those who are around me. And I just said this on my platform. If a man does not process his pain or trauma, he becomes homicidal or suicidal. One or the other. Either you're going to hurt yourself, or you're going to hurt yourself, or you're going to hurt somebody else, or hurt both. It's important, brothers, because I'm telling you, my sisters are married. And I've said this to my brother-in-law. Hey, they cannot call me. Call me. Do not allow whatever you're doing with to be projected and carried on these, because that they don't deserve that. And I get it. The weight of it is just like, but man, get to a place where you can say, listen, I need to leave, babe. I need to go take a drive.